It's an exciting time to be an Unamagi Cape Breton. We're having an economic renaissance.
The Cape Bretoners I come across are doing amazing things out in the world.
Throughout this series, we'll show you why there's never been a better time to invest in Cape Breton. I'm your host, Michelle Sampson. For many Cape Bretoners, outmigration is a rite of passage. They leave for school, for work opportunities, for the adventure of it. We see this as a loss for the island. But what if our so-called lost Capers are actually an incredible asset? That's the view of today's guest, Sean Meister, the president and CEO of Global Bluenosers. In this episode, he makes the case that our diaspora, more on that term in a minute, can drive economic development right here in Unamagi Cape Breton by opening doors to investment, mentorship, and new export markets. Whether you're firmly planted here on the island or a global Cape Bretoner yourself, keep listening to find out how you can tap into the impressive network that Sean is building. Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for joining us on Invest in Cape Breton.
Absolute pleasure to join you, Michelle. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So right off the top, why don't you tell us about what Global Bluenosers is and how it came to be?
Well, I'm in Nova Scotia, so I'm going to try to keep this short, but you know, it's a long journey. Global Bluenosers, what it is right now, we're a federal not-for-profit that's focused on diaspora engagement, which is a word that not a lot of people know, but diaspora meaning sort of the population away from a homeland. So I always say it's a community for Nova Scotians by birth or by choice outside of the province. So we're very much focused on reconnecting people back to the province and to each other. The way that we came about goes all the way back to my own time living away. I was an obsessive Nova Scotian when I was living away, always trying to find ways to reconnect and to find other Nova Scotians. So when I moved home, I really started to really re-engage with that community through an economic development lens when I was working for the province. And that just sort of fed an obsession with this idea of diasporas and communities abroad and led to, during the pandemic, posting a lot about Nova Scotia, starting to really engage with the community and then launching a podcast to introduce people to the vast community of Nova Scotians and Cape Bretoners around the world. That slowly evolved into hosting kitchen parties around the world, because why not? Might as well get on a plane and bring Nova Scotians together. And then it just sort of became a momentum thing where I just started to really realize Nova Scotians wanted to reconnect with each other. They wanted to find their tribe where they were living in the world. They wanted to hear what was going on at home. They wanted to find ways to re-engage and stay connected and give back in any way they could. So that has slowly evolved from, you know, a podcast and events into a full-fledged not-for-profit that's focused on engaging, celebrating, and activating that diaspora community for the benefit of them and for the benefit of the province.
As someone who lived away myself, I would have loved to have this when I was in Ontario. I was like you. I was never an Ontarian, always a Cape Bretoner. You couldn't take that out of me. But maybe for people who are less familiar, can you tell me just a little bit more about what is a diaspora community and just explain that a little bit more?
So a diaspora community, it can take on a lot of different definitions. If you talk to some of the people that are sort of the originators of a lot of the diaspora talk, and especially diaspora communities as they are nowadays, they'd say there's definitions, but not like a set definition. So it really is around the concept of migration and mobility, the idea of people from a place that expand out and leave it. For me, I define it as not just those born and raised, but sort of a broader definition of, especially in a place like Nova Scotia, where we have so many universities and post-secondary, it's also people that have a strong affinity to the province, or people that are sort of heritage diaspora. So, you know, their parents or grandparents left years ago, and they've descended from that diaspora. Hmm. One thing I think any Nova Scotian or especially Cape Bretoners will understand is that if you've got even the slightest connection to the place through a grandparent, even if you grew up in Calgary or London or somewhere around the world, you're probably going to have spent some time here, so you have an affinity. So it really does come down to individuals who share sort of an affinity or love for a defined place, and in this case, Nova Scotia. So it's a hard definition. There's a lot of different ones out there, and I find each jurisdiction, each organization that focuses on it takes a different angle. But I always sum it up, it's people living outside the province who are Nova Scotian by birth or by choice.
Mm. Yeah, the ones with heritage is so interesting because I've seen it. Like those summer vacations can go such a long way. And, you know, I think it says something about the attractiveness of this place that they would almost identify, you know, either as much, maybe even more with this place than the place where they grew up. So that's really remarkable.
I think it's really important to highlight that because it's, for me, what I found through this work is there's no real way to predict how someone's going to feel about this place. Some of the most passionate supporters of Nova Scotian companies that I've worked with are people that weren't born here. They fell in love with the place either through school or through work or just by a random vacation and then slowly got more and more pulled in. Then maybe they bought a cottage and then they started to spend more time here, but they got drawn in and through that they developed a really strong affinity for the place and a love for the place. So it's one of the things I really try to pound the drum on is what's on a birth certificate is important in diaspora work. It's not the only thing.
Hmm.
There's a lot of different life experiences that can lead to a love for a place like Nova Scotia. And it's important to foster and appreciate and recognize all of those various ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's another angle I want to pick your brain on. So typically, economic development organizations like the Cape Breton Partnership, you know, have focused on keeping youth, say, here or luring expats back. Why do you focus on those who aren't looking to come home, at least not in the immediate future?
Yeah, it's a question I get quite a bit. And for me, I look at it from a few different angles. First and foremost, when I look at it from the diaspora perspective, is I want to make sure that people are feeling that connection to home in an authentic way. So it's not just about the actual mobility of trying to get people home. It's lots of people want to stay connected and deserve to stay connected. And so for me, it's always been about just engaging with them in that way and in that point in their life. But I've always described it as like in Nova Scotia, we sort of view those two goalposts, like stop people from leaving and then try to get them home. And we don't think about that in between.
Mm.
The reason I focus on that is that's where all the power really is, especially from an economic development perspective. You want to engage people while they're away, while they're gaining that experience, while they have those networks, while they have instant access to all of those things and knowledge and people that you want as an economic development agency or as a company. So it's really important to engage them at that moment and not to engage them from the perspective of, I'm coming to you because I'm trying to convince you to come home. Because you never really know where people are in their life. If they don't want to come back, that doesn't mean they're a lost asset. They're still really, really important.
Mm.
So it's about really understanding the journey of a diaspora and understanding that you have to engage with them in a really authentic way and in the way that their lives are being lived. And that means at that moment in time. So for me, it really is critical to focus on between those goalposts, not on either one of them in particular, but engaging people, bringing that value at that moment when they're out in the markets that we want to be working within.
Right. Okay, we're going to get more into the specifics of what this engagement looks like and how this helps with economic development and all that. But just I have one more question before we get off this kind of economic development topic. Is this something that other jurisdictions are doing, leveraging their diaspora?
Yes, a lot. So this is something that I'd say in Canada, we're pretty far behind when it comes to diaspora engagement. Other jurisdictions have been doing it for decades, generations almost.
Wow.
I've always felt that the leader in it are the Irish. Ireland has been, both the Republic and Northern Ireland, incredibly good at engaging a diaspora and recognizing the importance of the diaspora. The Irish diaspora have played such an important role in what Ireland has become, especially from a sort of a tech destination. They played a really important role in that. But they've invested time and money and they've created central strategies within government that drive decision making, that keep diaspora at the heart of everything they do. So I always say they're kind of the gold standard, but they're not the only ones. The Scottish do it. The New Zealanders do it. The Vietnamese, all across Africa, are incredible. India has a massive diaspora and they leverage that incredibly. I mean, yeah, you can pretty much point to anywhere on the map outside of North America and you can say they've got something going on in the diaspora space. So it's not new. This is not reinventing the wheel or anything. This is a tried and true playbook by other jurisdictions. And from my perspective, it's been about how do we get Nova Scotia catching up. But broadly, Canada just as a whole has not been great at it. So yeah, lots of people are doing it.
Okay, so let's get more specific. Can you tell us about the global Cape Bretoners in your network?
They're probably the most passionate. And I apologize to all the other regions of the province when I say that. My fellow South Shore people are going to probably fill my inbox when they hear that. The Cape Bretoners are a unique group. And I say that with all the love and affinity that could come from that. It's really interesting. When I was living away, the way I described myself was I was a Nova Scotian and then I was a Canadian. And that's kind of how the tier was. With Cape Bretoners, they're a Cape Bretoner, then they're a Nova Scotian, and then they're a Canadian. And you can really see the importance of identity based on how that is. And then when you really talk to them, they'll get down to the county or community level. It's a strong level of just passion and love. I don't think I've met a group quite like Cape Bretoners when it comes to standing up for home, warts and all. I think that's one of the great things about a diaspora is, you know, when you leave, you really can view the place from the good and the bad. Often you've left because of economic reasons. We're lucky in Nova Scotia and Cape Breton. People are leaving for opportunity, not because of war or conflict. Mm. So when you leave, you'll often look back and say, oh, I kind of wish they did this at home or that at home to make things better. But you're looking at it from a place of love. And the Cape Bretoners are sort of like the next tier up in that. They're very passionate, but they're also really, really accomplished. Mm. So, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we don't talk about enough is the folks that have left have done amazing things. And the Cape Bretoners I come across are doing amazing things out in the world. And I say that Cape Bretoners both by birth and by choice. With Cape Breton University, there's lots of people that come and fall in love with the place and go out. So it's a large group. They're all very passionate about Cape Breton and they're talking about it to everyone in their networks. They're always trying to drive people to Cape Breton for vacations, wherever they live. So yeah, they're best summed up as just very, very passionate and very accomplished.
Yeah. Where are they? What industries are they in? Is there any kind of concentration or is it all over the board?
It's all over the board in a lot of ways. I mean, I think that's sort of the nature of what I've seen through this. And we're starting to gather some data that will hopefully give us more clarity on that. At this point in our journey, a lot of it's anecdotal. The community that I deal with, they're typically sort of in that middle to upper management group. So they're more established, they're ambitious, they're working in everything from tech to life sciences to manufacturing, oil and gas. You go across the board, there's going to be people from Cape Breton and from Nova Scotia in those industries. And they really are spread all over. Like you kind of, it's concentric circles in terms of where people are located. So, you know, the largest group would be elsewhere in Canada. Then you get into the US, that's where the next biggest group. And then you start getting into areas like the UK, very large populations. I've come across lots of Cape Bretoners when I've done events in London, but then further and further out, Australia, into Southeast Asia, you can find them everywhere. I've found people from Cape Breton and from Nova Scotia pretty much in every part of the world. And they really are across the board in terms of what they're doing. But again, like I said, they're accomplished. The ones I'm dealing with are sort of in that management group or even early in their career on a going quickly up the ranks. But that's what I've seen.
Yeah. Okay. So can we get into more detail about how these global Cape Bretoners are looking to stay engaged and how they're looking to give back?
Yeah, so it is a very individualized thing. Our focus is to give pathways for people to contribute back if they want to, but everyone's going to have different ways. It can range, the range of contribution can be anything from wanting to help a fellow Cape Bretoner that's on the ground in another market, either moving there or traveling there. So just very quick one-off help, all the way through to wanting to help companies access sales networks to get, you know, on the ground insights, to invest in companies, to advise and guide, but then also wanting to contribute from a philanthropic perspective. So they want to, you know, take what they've earned. Typically a diaspora population has fairly high earning potential. That's sort of part of the dynamic when people leave. So they might have access to a bit more capital. They're looking to deploy that back home if they can easily find the routes to do that and are engaged in more of a, they want to do more than just write a check. They typically want to be able to contribute, but then also advise and guide and add that knowledge and experience that they've garnered from the time away. So that's really what it is. When they're wanting to give back, often it's through companies. They're wanting to support companies, but also to community and initiatives on the ground. And then right to the individual level, they want to help people either in the diaspora or back home, particularly through the knowledge and experience that they've garnered in their lives.
So are there any particular kinds of Cape Breton-based businesses, professionals, organizations that can really benefit from engaging with them?
The ones that are going to benefit the most are companies that are looking external. So if you're an exporting company, and by exporting, again, I mean outside of the province, it doesn't matter what size you are, but if that's sort of your objective is to grow and scale, that's where this community becomes really beneficial, because then you can sort of access the full suite of knowledge from them. So any company, any business owner, any entrepreneur could benefit from the knowledge and insights from the Cape Breton diaspora. That's just a fact that I think every jurisdiction has seen. You're going to learn something from talking to other people, and you're especially going to learn something from talking to people that have lived and grown careers and businesses away from where you've experienced. But particularly if you're looking to then sell and grow into international markets, if you're looking to draw in investment to help grow and scale, that's where those knowledge and insights become that much more important. Because if you're a company in Cape Breton, say you're a tech company, you're a life sciences company, or you're a consumer goods company, and you've earmarked that you want to go to the UK, not only can you get the strategic guidance from people on the ground in, you know, London or elsewhere in the UK on how to build that plan, how to do it properly, when you get to the point that you're ready to go, they're also there as a resource to start opening doors. And when you get on the plane and go over there, because you need to when you're an exporter, they're then going to be there to welcome you. They're going to take you out for dinner. They're going to introduce you to people. They're going to tell you where to go, what to do. So you really start to get that full value of having somebody in your corner who understands both worlds. They understand your operating environment in Cape Breton, and then they understand the operating environment of the place that you want to tackle as a business. So those are the companies I always say are best suited to get full value from a diaspora population, especially from sort of global Blue Nosers and global Cape Bretoners.
All of this sounds amazing. What are the nuts and bolts here? How do they tap into this diaspora?
Well, that's what we're building right now. That's sort of the stage we're at. You know, we've spent a couple of years building the momentum of a community and building the trust with the diaspora that we're not, you know, just in it to take, that we focus on giving to them first. So for companies that want to access it, the best place to start is to actually have a chat with me, because we're developing a few programs and initiatives for people to really tap into it. But we're kind of looking for the early adopters, the ones that really want to help us, you know, dial in what that program and support looks like through the diaspora population. So the best place to start is me. Connect with me on LinkedIn, or I'll provide my details. You can share with anybody that's interested, but have a chat with me. You know, we can learn about your goals and objectives and sort of start to go from there to tailor some support around how to tap into some Cape Bretoners around the world to give you the help you need.
Great. We'll put those details down in the show notes, but as Nova Scotia's LinkedIn guy, that's a great place to start with, Sean.
LinkedIn is an easy place to start, yeah.
So, you know, you've talked about how the expats that you're working with have very successful lives. It sounds like they have very exciting lives. If someone maybe is listening who has been thinking about going abroad to get some global experience, can you help them as well?
Absolutely. So that we've seen happening quite a bit. When people are looking to go, what we can do there is, when people are sort of at the exploratory phase, we can connect them in with expats and Blue Nosers in the places that they're looking to go for sort of like pre-vetting. We've done that where people are looking at it, where we say, okay, have some conversations with the folks that have been there, done that. See if it is everything you think it could be, or if you're traveling someplace to explore, we'll get you connected to, you know, have dinner with four or five of them to really go deep and hear what it's going to be like. Similarly, if you're going abroad, you're going to be looking for jobs. You're going to be looking for a place to live. You're going to have to deal with whole new tax systems and banking and everything. These are all kind of the things that the Blue Nosers can help with on the ground. And we see that all the time. So there's lots of ways that we can help there. And we love to do that. You know, we want to give sort of a soft landing. If somebody decides to leave Nova Scotia, that they're going to land and feel a sense of community the second they get there.
Okay. I just know that someone is listening who's got their hackles up and they're thinking, no, don't help them leave. As a proud Blue Noser yourself, why are you so comfortable facilitating these kinds of exits?
Few different reasons. First of all, if somebody's going to leave, they're going to leave. So I don't think it helps to try to push back against somebody's ambition to leave. Usually, if you've talked to enough people that have left, the vast majority of them have something in their mind. And I'd say the best thing for us to do as a community is to support them in that. The other side of it, which is sort of the bigger picture, the macro picture, is we want people to go out and gather global experience. Those other jurisdictions I talked about, like the Irelands of the world, they encourage people to go out and gather that knowledge and experience because they see the value in having a network of people that have gone out into the world, gathered knowledge, connections, capital. And then if they've already got the ways to then bring that back into the community, either through them moving back or through them contributing as a diaspora population, that makes us even stronger. So for me, somebody leaving Nova Scotia, it's tough. I've done it. You know, that was the thing I heard was don't do it, don't leave. Where I've gotten to in my life is like, no, we want people to gather that knowledge because then we can all benefit from it. Those of us that have left and those of us that haven't, we all benefit from a population that is tapped into the world. So yeah, I want that to be facilitated and supported so that we don't have people off in every direction. If people are going to leave, do it in a way that they feel supported, and then they're going to more easily give back when they get to the point that they can.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about this creating mass exodus either, because there are some people who absolutely want to go get that global experience, and then there are other people who are like, I am very happy here. Thank you very much.
And it's true. And the other reality is that by design, through every diaspora population, a percentage returns home. So people are going to come back too. Are all of them? No. And that's completely fine. But a percentage will come back. So it sort of restocks the shelves. That talent does come back. And if anything, you know, we should be having conversations with that population to learn what are their motivations for leaving? What are their motivations for returning? And then how can we take all of that knowledge to better design systems and policies here to be supportive not just of those that stay, but those that leave, and how to address the things that, you know, there are going to be problems here that make people want to leave and things that make people want to come back. So we just have to do better at getting that information so that we can address that. We control the things that we can control and not control the things that we can't, which is people's individual motivations.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you already kind of mentioned that you're looking for your founding members. Tell us a little bit more about your memberships as they're going to roll out over, you know, say the next number of months or even years, if you've got that planned out, and who should consider getting a membership?
Yeah, so that's really been at the core of our organization growing. You know, we're a not-for-profit and we don't take any sort of core funding from government. So we needed a revenue plan. The membership and that official way for people to buy into the community has been a key part. A really light touch membership. So we have launching this week our founding members. So that'll be a group of 30 people that are sort of through the gate first and really help us dial in what the community looks like from an engagement perspective. And then we're just going to have two sort of core memberships that people can join, a general and a premium. Really, again, all focused on people who understand the value of networks in their careers. It's a professional network, so there's a large social component, but the real focus here is about joining a network and a community that's there to lift you up on your professional journey. So that's the first and foremost thing. So if somebody doesn't need a network in their career, if they're in a career where that doesn't mean anything, they're probably not going to be the right one. But if you really want to be surrounded by a global network locally where you live and in cities around the world, that's really who it's for and how to accelerate that in a really Nova Scotian way. So yeah, we're rolling that out. It's going to be focused on bringing people together through in-person and virtual events, really looking at ways to facilitate connections amongst each other, how to support one another, and then how to turn that into giving back to the province through supporting companies and things like that. So That's the focus. It's for ambitious professionals around the world with any sort of connection to Nova Scotia who want to really build up their network and contribute back to the province as well.
And you're also including in your memberships as an option the Boomerang Blue Nosers as well, right?
Yes. So that's a fun one that we've added in, which I don't know why it took me so long considering that's who I am. And that's you and I are both in that category. Like I said, a part of a diaspora population is that a percentage of people return. That's a unique journey in and of itself. I've been going through it for 8 years now where the return back is not what you expect. So we wanted to add in a way for that community to join into Global Blue Nosers to support one another on the ground here in Nova Scotia, wherever they are in the province, to give them access to that global network. Most of them have lived internationally, so they and their careers can then tap into the Global Blue Nosers in a way that they really know how. And then for people that do decide to want to come home, it gives a nice soft landing. Just like we want to help people if they're going to leave the province, give them that soft landing in a city where they're going. When someone decides they want to return home, we want to give them a soft landing of a community that understands that journey. And so that's who the Boomerang Blue Nosers will be. So those are the two categories, the folks that have left and are still away and the people that have left and returned. And that's going to make up Global Blue Nosers over the short and medium and probably long term.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of joining your Boomerang Blue Nosers event that you held in Halifax last fall. And I really found this group just so eager to help, which is so great. Like, I think sometimes people might wonder, well, I can join this thing, but, you know, is it just going to be crickets?
Yeah.
And that is certainly not the case.
Well, I mean, there's rarely crickets when it's Nova Scotians involved. So there's, I mean, I think that's been maybe the thing that I've loved the most of this journey for me is it's very much tapped into the human side of Nova Scotia that I always knew about. But, you know, until you really purposefully look at it, you don't recognize it. I always say that pretty much everyone that engages at my events or that I talk to or whatever it might be, the number one thing they ask is how they can help. And I think that just says so much about who we are as a people that the first instinct isn't to say, like, you know, what can I get? It's how can I help? And I think that's what, you know, the Boomerang Blue Noser event, I think we saw it in that is people wanted to help each other out. I see it in the events when we host them around the world, when we do things virtually. Same thing is people want to give. They want to give back to each other. They want to help. And I don't know. I just find that really refreshing in a world that sometimes can feel like people aren't thinking about how they want to help each other out.
Right. And for these memberships, how can they sign up?
Go to the website, globalbluenosers.ca. You'll find everything right there on the homepage and under the memberships tab. So people can go there, sign up for the wait list or go direct to purchase. And once they get onboarded, we get rolling. They get to experience the power of a diaspora network, which is a pretty magical thing.
This was so interesting. I'm exactly the kind of nerd to have found this absolutely fascinating, Sean. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
I mean, my biggest thing is I like to reinforce is for any of folks that are here at home, whether in government or just living their lives, don't forget about how big Nova Scotia actually is. So it's like we always look at Nova Scotia as like we're the small little underdogs sticking off out into the Atlantic. The thing I've learned is we have so much power at our disposal when we think about the amount of people that love this place. So when we talk about ourselves, let's maybe shake off a little bit of the self-deprecation. Let's realize just how amazing the place is and how strong the province is. And to really reach that potential, we want everybody in. So, you know, reach out to those people in your network that have left and make sure they know how much they're appreciated and bring them in under the tent because, yeah, we've got so much at our disposal that we still have untapped.
Great. Yeah. Share this episode. Email your sons and daughters and cousins and uncles. And all right. Thank you so much, Sean. This was so great.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you'd like to connect with Sean, you can find links to his LinkedIn profile and the Global Blue Nosers website in the show notes. New episodes of Invest in Cape Breton are coming soon. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to be notified when they drop. Our theme music is Under My Skin by Glace Bay's own Elise Aaron. Invest in Cape Breton is produced by Storied Places Media and hosted by me, Michelle Sampson. Thanks for listening.